What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Parish Circuit. I'm Stuart Amidon, and I'm joined by Scott Payton. Scott, thank you so much for coming to visit with us today. I appreciate you giving of your time. I know you're a busy guy.
Well, I appreciate you having me, Stuart.
Yeah, man. Scott serves as the state director for Right on Crime. Scott, what does that mean exactly?
Right on Crime is a conservative think tank, and we seek conservative solutions to criminal justice policies, focusing on protecting the public and the rights for victims.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Well, we're not here to talk about that today, but one day later on, we'll have to come back and we'll have to talk about that more. Today, I saw you in the news and you and I are friends. We've been friends for a little while, gotten to know each other more over the years, but recently you were in the news locally and nationally because you had been a member of the Roman Catholic Church for 22 years. You served as a deacon for 11 of those years, which is like a voluntary priest-ish role, if I understand that correctly. And you were recently excommunicated? What the heck happened? What is that about?
Yes, Stuart, it's been a long journey, a little over 5 years, 4.5 years. As you're probably aware, you know, in 2018, our son came forward with allegations and of that our parish priest had molested him. We, you know, after he came forward, you know, we went to the sheriff's department. Criminal investigation was done. Yeah. The priest admitted to molesting our son. Wow. Eventually, was convicted of molestation of a juvenile. Wow. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison, with 3 of those being suspended, which basically gives him 7 years to serve in prison. He'll be out in, I believe it's 25 or the first part of 2026.
Only 7 years.
Only 7 years.
Like that.
And
that's crazy.
The maximum penalty was 10 years for that. There
really?
There is a bill this session that is going to, or proposes to add a section in that molestation of a juvenile statute that if you're a member of the clergy and the abuse occurred because of your position as a clergyman, either, you know, either through counseling or whatever the interaction was, if you betrayed that trust, it would double those penalties. So he could have been looking at 20 years
instead of 10,
if this law would have
even
been
20
in effect.
Is too little in my opinion.
And there were so many other, I mean, we're grateful to have received that justice on the criminal side, because in St. Landry Parish, this parish had the most of the priests that were on the list that the diocese brought out. There were 33 priests on that list that had credible allegations of sexual abuse.
What?
Yes.
In St. Landry?
No,
parish?
No, in the entire diocese.
In the diocese.
But the overwhelming majority of that 33 served time, you know, we're pastors here in St. Landry Parish.
Holy smokes.
Yes.
And this is over what time period?
Since the beginning of the diocese.
Good.
It spans a long period. And what is unique about our case is, outside of Gilbert Gothe, who was ground zero in the clergy sex abuse, which, you know, started in Abbeville, only 2 priests have gone to prison for molesting a child. And it was Gilbert Gothe and Father Michael Guidry who molested our son. So, you know, justice has not been served for those hundreds of victims that those 33, yeah, you know, men caused harm to. So we, you know, after that conviction, I was still a deacon.
You're still serving in the church.
Still serving in the church. We began to get a little pushback from the diocese on how to move forward, with the hurt that our son was going through, the need for counseling. We ended up filing a lawsuit against the Diocese of Lafayette, and that was a long, drawn-out, painful process. Mm. During the period of the lawsuit, I stepped away from ministry. I was unassigned. I was serving in Ville Platte and decided to step back. As a pastor, I'm sure you know, if you're wounded and you're hurt, it is very difficult or almost impossible for you to try to lead and try to minister to people's needs when,
sure,
when you're hurt and broken as well.
Sure. Yeah.
And when that hurt comes from the church, You know, I just felt it was my duty to step back. And I did. The lawsuit was painful. You know, in the world of civil litigation, you know, our son, my wife, myself, you know, we were blamed for the abuse. They tried to put, you know, responsibility on us as well. And that was very hurtful to have that come from the people that I serve. And, you know, in the Catholic faith, deacons and priests both receive the sacrament of holy orders, which is ordination. Now, a priest has more faculties than a deacon, but...
meaning they do more.
They do more, yes.
They have more responsibility. So, like, you, as a deacon in the Roman Catholic Church, would you conduct a mass, or did you have the, you know... Like,
I would assist.
Like
Diaconate is a call to service.
Okay.
You know, from the first biblical call of the deacons to serve at table, to allow the priest to do their work, and we kind of do the service part of it.
I see.
And, you know, and that role has kind of merged or formed into where being part of the laity and being ordained, we as deacons were supposed to be able to bring the needs of the community directly to the priest as someone that lives in the world that has a wife and a family. We should be able to bring special, you know, interest or needs to the priest and needs of the community. But like I'm able to marry, baptize, and preach and those type of things. And
so you were faithfully working, faithfully serving. Lawsuit starts. Seems like there's some injustice going on here. You're still a part of the Catholic Church at this point, but you're just not serving in the capacity of a deacon. Is that right?
Correct. We were attending Mass every Sunday, you know, still in the middle of things and still trying to hold on to our faith. Mm. And after the lawsuit settled, things kind of died down a little bit. I mean, we're still working through the healing process for our family and most importantly for our son.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
I went back to ministry for a little while.
As a deacon, you're talking about.
As a deacon, yeah. About a year ago.
Still in the Catholic Church.
Still in the Catholic Church. Yeah. And you know, Stuart, I began to see, because my work with Right on Crime has me at the legislature. I sit side by side with the lobbyist that works for the bishops, the Catholic bishops, and began to see, you know, the lobbyist lobby against bills that would protect victims. That, for example, the look back window bill that came through a few sessions ago, the Catholic bishops were in opposition to that bill.
Well, now what would that bill have done?
What the bill would have done is there's a statute of limitations for when you can file a civil suit.
This
would have opened a window for those that missed it. And I can't remember the number of years that statute of limitations is, but it would have opened it up. So studies show that, you know, if you're abused as a child, especially in a clergy abuse setting, most of the time you won't reveal that until you're an adult, until later on in life. Mm. And we were fortunate, you know, that our son came forward only after 3 years, but some take decades to come forward. And stories like this sometimes prompt victims to see, hey, I can come forward. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of shame associated or shame that's put on the victim and the family. We were, you know, we're in a small community in Morrow where our church parish was, and the community was upset with us more so than they were with the priest. It was another level of betrayal.
What is so? They're upset with you because you're bringing it up because you're saying this happened?
Yes. They were upset with us to the point, Stuart, we were confronted at the sentencing hearing by members of the church parish. They held a dinner, a luncheon for Father Guidry when he came back to the parish to get his things from the rectory. They held a luncheon in the very room that our son was molested in, and bought hamburgers. The parish president was there, and yeah, I reported it. It took a while to get a response, but the vicar general wrote a letter to our son apologizing and realizing how insensitive that was, considering not a soul in that parish ever came to our home to tell us, you know, we're sorry this has happened, or to offer any support. And this is a community I grew up in. But that just shows the influence that, you know, a priest can have, who can admit to doing something and yet still have people that believe he's innocent.
Wild.
It was a whole nother betrayal of trust. Right. And the damage that does for our son, you know, to have people that have known our family our entire lives to choose this priest who admitted to doing it,
right,
over our son who had nothing to gain by making anything up, and his account has never been in doubt.
Well, obviously not, because no, he went through criminal court.
He confessed, and in his deposition, he admits to what he's done. So it's so disturbing, and the challenges are just so unique. The dynamics behind it are hard to explain.
This is fascinating to me about the Roman Catholic Church, because in the broader evangelical Protestant church, I see the opposite to be true. Like, there's kind of a casual distrust of pastors, you know, that exists in the world. But inside of the Roman Catholic Church, you had this, they were rallying around the one who perpetuated the abuse, not the one who had been abused.
And I was a deacon there. I was a member of the clergy as well, but did not get, and I don't want blind following, you know, it's, but I've never done anything to anyone in the community to earn their distrust, which was very hurtful, not just for our son, but for my wife and I. Matter of fact, Stuart, this will blow your mind, but as you know, Catholics have the sacrament of confession.
Yes.
And there's a book out, and it's been approved, and it's widely used, and it's called an examination of conscience, where you go through the Ten Commandments, and you know, it shows ways that you may have broken those. You know, for example, lying would be one. But there is one about gossiping about your priest, and that is a sin. That is a sin that you have to confess. So when you look at it, the Catholic culture has created that if I do see the priest do something, if I tell, that's
I'm
a sin,
sinning.
And that's gossip. And
now I got to go to confession.
I have to go to confession, and that's another
tell that guy.
that is another dynamic, Stuart. When you look at it from a predator's position, when a priest who is a predator hears the confession of his victim or person that he's grooming, but also hears the confession of his parents and all the members of his family. Imagine how much power that predator has to know the weak points and the strong points, but not just of the person he's planning to abuse, but his parents.
Yes.
So he knows exactly what to say.
He knows how to navigate the circumstances.
And
he knows how to play the game.
And this was a patient person. We knew him for 10 years and he was a friend. We ate dinner with him. I mean, I served on the side of him in mass. We presided over funerals together, weddings. This was someone that was trusted by our family, but he knew every single thing about us, you know, through the sacrament of confession. And I have no doubt he used that in manipulating our son and in grooming our family, because I was law enforcement at that time. I was a probation and parole officer. I'd been through the police academy. I had previous work with child protection, so I knew the red flags. And today I can go back and I can point to everything he's done and you know, in hindsight, and pull those red flags and say, this is wrong. And if you were to tell me the scenario of what was going on back then, I would have said, oh, that's a red flag.
Watch out.
But we were groomed. I was literally blinded by the Roman collar. And so immersed in the trust. But it's that, you know, that's who we went to for spiritual guidance. That's who, when our family had a problem, we went and talked to him.
Right.
And that's what made this so hard for all of us is that hurt. We rely on our faith to overcome whatever adversities we have in life. But when it's the source of your faith, so to speak, the church that causes that harm, it's hard to recover.
So you went back. You're trying to serve as a deacon. All this stuff keeps coming up. Like what was the tipping point for you where you said, you know what, I don't think I can do this anymore. I think we got to move on.
Yeah, and I should have pulled the trigger a long time ago, like right after this happened. Mm-hmm. If it would have been anything else, if it would have been my employer, if it would have been an organization that we were a part of that wasn't the church, we would have left it. And there would have mm-hmm. been no second thoughts.
Right.
We would have severed ties and walked away. But the faith part is so complex. The Catholic faith believes they are the one true church.
Right.
So it's the Catholic faith or it's hell.
No two choices.
There is no in between.
No other option.
And
or purgatory. Maybe you get a little.
Well, like purgatory would mean you're on your way to heaven. So hell, that. No. But purgatory would have been a blessing. But but it literally it's the church or it's hell. And oftentimes John 6 is quoted in where would I go? Mm-hmm. And we've had comments from good friends, and I'm not knocking them because it's. I understand. I drank the Kool-Aid too. But, you know, they would tell us, yes, we know there are bad things. We know there are issues with the hierarchy, but there's no other church to go to. Mm. And I saw, Stuart, our faith and our family beginning to not beginning, it had been crumbling. We just hadn't seen it. Mm. The irony in all this, you mentioned, you know, I've been Catholic for over 20 years. I chose to join the Catholic faith to create unity in our family. So my wife and I would go to the same church. Matter of fact, at that time I wasn't, in 2001, wasn't practicing anything.
It was something.
The contradiction would have been horrible when telling my kids, hey, you and mom, y'all go to church, dad stays home and watch football.
Sure, yeah.
And I did it selfishly to bring our family together. But when I began to really immerse myself in the Christian faith, we had a conversion. My wife and I both, and we knew how valuable it was to our marriage, to our family, that Christ be first and foremost in everything that we do. So my intention was to bring us together through our love of Christ and build our family. And in the end, in hindsight today, Stuart, this is the very thing that has destroyed and I don't use that lightly, but it has crumbled our faith.
I understand.
You know, we question God when bad things happen.
Sure.
And if you look at it, it's like I was a ordained servant in his church, an ordained minister in his church, you know, took the innocence of our child. It destroyed our trust in the hierarchy, in the Catholic faith, in the men that run that institution.
Sure.
But then to be treated worse than the person that molested someone, it baffles me. And, you know, back in December, when I was looking at the effort and time and money that the Diocese of Lafayette spent battling that law I mentioned earlier, the look back law at the Louisiana Supreme Court, And it struck me, it's like, does the church need a law to do what is morally right? And they shouldn't. They should not need a law passed, and nor should they be fighting a law that is telling them to do the right thing. It should be the other way around. Our church leaders should be influencing our lawmakers to do what is moral, what is Christian, what is right for society.
Yes.
And when a church will not admit its wrongdoings, and more importantly, will not help those it hurt, I cannot and will not be a part of that. And in December, that's what I sent to the bishop, was until the church lives up to the ideals that it professes, I can't be a part of it. I cannot be a part of an institution that from the Pope on down, the Pope has admitted the wrongdoings, but it's been lip service. They have not learned. And you would think the Diocese of Lafayette would have learned from what happened back in the 80s with Gilbert Gothe but they have not, and continue to treat victims poorly, and have to be forced to do the right thing.
So I have many friends and relationships that have similar stories to yours. It's kind of, it's shocking, honestly, the amount of allegations that are so old. Also, it's not just within the last 10 years. Like, we're talking about generations past as well would have stories, and their experience was very similar to you, is that they would go to their parents or go to their family members and say, "Hey, this has happened to me." And their family members would say, "We don't talk about that." It was almost like it was always a thing existing within at least the Roman Catholic Church in South Louisiana. I don't know about other parts of the country, but it seems to have been a perpetual issue over time. And so the idea that now that the church would be pushing back against this look back law can only make me think, what else do they know about? Like, what other skeletons do they know are in the closet that they don't want to come out?
And you know, my grandmother, she's deceased now, but the two people she respected the most in the world were a priest and a state trooper. And, you know, if you look at it, we are brought up to respect law enforcement, or we should be.
Sure.
And we're also brought up to respect those pastors, whether they're they're Protestant pastors or whether they're Catholic priests. But you imagine, I couldn't imagine my mother telling my grandmother, you know, 2 decades ago that a priest molested her, when these were the two highest people she held above doctors, above anything, what was a priest. And that's our culture here.
I mean, right.
If you look at our state flag, our civil parishes are follow the Catholic structure of having parishes and are centered around the church. You look here in Opelousas, St. Landry Catholic Church, it's the prominent building in the parish. Our whole communities were based on the Catholic faith and started in that way. So our culture is so immersed, and which is so hard for our son and so hard for us.
Because it's everywhere.
Because everywhere you cannot
get
away from the Catholic influence. And I'm not knocking the good men and women who are faithfully going to worship Christ, but they are part of the solution in addressing this, because they have to hold those accountable.
Yeah.
You know, we see it throughout, and you know, in the Bible, we've seen it too. The community has to come together, and they should not stand for the corruption inside their church.
Right. Amen. And so December comes, everything comes to a head. You submit your resignation. I assume you like sent him a letter or something like that. You sent him a letter, and then you moved on, right? Family moves on together. You guys go and you found another church.
Yeah, we, you know, I'm a man of my word, and you know, I made a commitment in a church to God and to the bishop when I was ordained back in August of 2012, and you know, part of that commitment, before I went to another church or before I professed another faith, I felt like I owed the bishop a resignation, one from my office of the diaconate, and one to let him know that we were leaving the Catholic faith, and to give him reasons why. And, you know, within a day, he responded. I sent him an email. He responded, and it was, a pastoral email that he was sad. And he tells me, sacramentally, you are still a deacon, even though you don't, you know, profess, or even though you're not going to exercise, you know, your duties in that. And I thought it was over. That was December. I wanted to make a clean break and a quiet break. Mm-hmm. The dust had kind of settled. You know, our son's still, it's a long healing process.
Sure.
It's been a long healing process for us. We're not nowhere near healed. But I wanted to get our faith back. I wanted to be able to go to a service. I wanted to put Christ as the center of our worship, and not a church, not an institution. I wanted to put Christ front and center. And I want to rebuild what our family was losing. Our kids, surprisingly, from 14 to 28, could point out the hypocrisy of us continuing to be part of the Catholic faith. Mm. They would hear my wife and I discuss, you know, what we saw going wrong. They would hear us as, you know, since all this happened to our family, my wife and I get calls and texts and emails with a ton of things that are going wrong. Mm. And we've discussed those, and children hear that, and they were able to pick up and make that decision a lot quicker than my wife and I. Mm. But when you're confronted with the church or hell, it's a big decision. Sure. To make. So we chose to go to the Anglican Church.
It's Trinity Anglican.
Trinity Anglican.
Little plug right there.
Yes.
Yeah, Pastor Peter. Go hang out with Pastor Peter. Nice guy. Good old friend. We like those guys.
So we were just welcomed with open arms there. And, you know, it there's a transition. There's a lot that's different. We weren't looking for something similar to the Catholic Church. We were looking at a place that we can be fed spiritually, where we can grow. And you'll probably appreciate this, but having been a deacon, having been not in the pews, having been front and center, it is so nice to sit in the pews.
It's so great, isn't it?
Right, and be fed.
It's so great. I know every time, maybe people watching don't know this, I serve as a pastor at a church, but every time we go on vacation, and I get to just attend worship one Sunday, it's like wonderful. Oh, I'm sitting with my family. it's so nice.
You know, there's a lot of work goes into preparation, and when you're directing people, when you're sharing the gospel message, you want to make sure one, you're right, you're theologically correct, right. And it's not just the way I feel. It is what the Bible tells us, what Scripture tells us. So I love Father Peter's homilies or sermons, and we're being fed, and that's what our family needed to put Christ front and center. The bishop never mentioned Christ in coming back. He mentioned I was leaving the Catholic faith. He mentioned that I was leaving the Holy Eucharist. And for those that aren't Catholic, Catholics believe that, you know, the priest is able to make Christ present in the Holy Eucharist, which is the source and summit of the Catholic faith. And that's what our friends are telling us. You're leaving Jesus, because the Catholic Church is the only church that can bring Jesus. I have struggled from the time that this happened to our son till this day, because the church also believes that it is not the state of the minister, when it comes to this. And I have a hard time reconciling that someone can molest a child or take advantage of a vulnerable adult and then stand in front of the altar, stand in front of God, and bring Jesus present. Mm. There's just a lot of hypocrisy there.
Sure.
But it also makes the minister not accountable. Mm. If it doesn't matter his state, that you don't have to be in this state of holiness. We're all sinners, and there are going to be things that we do, sure, that offend God, that are sinful in God's eyes. But when you continue to do those, you don't seek amends, you don't seek forgiveness from those that you've harmed. Mm. There, in my opinion, becomes a big difference.
Yeah. So you submit the letter, he responds, he says, you know, you're still a part functionally of the diaconate, even though you're not practicing sacramentally, I'm sorry, is what he said. And then you guys find a new church, you land there for a little while, and it's all smooth sailing for a bit. But then something else happened. What was the next thing here?
On Saturday... Two weeks ago.
This is fresh.
Okay. This is still in my head here. I get a letter from the diocese in the mail. And matter of fact, the entire family, short of just a few, were in the vehicle. It's official, pretty letter. I open it up and I begin to read. And I look at my wife. I said, "You're not going to believe this." And she's like, "What?" I said, "The bishop has excommunicated me." And she's like, "As of when?" I said, "Well, it says upon receipt of this letter, so as of this exact moment, I have been excommunicated. Now, and
this is a huge deal in the Roman Catholic Church. Like, excommunication is as high as it goes, right? As far as what the diocese can
What the diocese can do. You know, the Catholic Church has its own laws, and it's called canon law. And this is the most extreme punishment you can receive. You know, as a Catholic, when I, as leaving the church, joining the Anglican Church, would put me in schism with the Catholic Church.
But not out.
But not out. I wouldn't get booted. You know, but so that would be, in essence, an automatic excommunication for me. I would not be able to receive the sacraments of the Catholic Church until I went back to confession and you know, confess my sin of not going to Mass or, you know, professing another faith. But what this does is the bishop took it to a new level. The top of the letter says decree. So it's kind of like the old days where, you know, someone runs out and reads this to the public, but he decrees it, so he takes it to that really official step. And wow. You know, unlike his email from 3 months ago, this was obviously written and probably written poorly, but written by a canon attorney, a canon lawyer within the church. It doesn't give a specific reason. It lists one of the canons that would either have me under apostasy, heresy, or schism, and I can only assume it's schism for going to another faith, which he didn't know that at the time. So it doesn't list it, which is weird. But know that I'm in the likes of King Henry VIII, Martin Luther.
Well, good company with Luther, though.
Yes,
yeah, we like him too.
And matter of fact, I am on a Wikipedia page now as someone has been recently excommunicated.
Holy smokes!
Yes, it is a
so
big,
it's a short list.
It's a short list, and you know, getting back to hate to keep bringing up hell, but this letter is a very fancy legal way of the bishop telling me to go to hell. Because wow. If I die in the state of sin, as the bishop here would certainly believe this, or he would be in fall in one of those categories, the church believes that I will go to hell.
Wow.
If I don't reconcile. And what this also does, Stuart, and you'll find this amazing, but he says that this excommunication is medicinal. And in so many words, says it hurts him as much as it's going to hurt me. An excommunication would have been more appropriate. Let's say I was continuing to serve as a deacon, but from the pulpit to the innocent laity, I was preaching that the church has done me wrong. The bishop, you know, needs to go, and you know, the pope is, you know, teaching wrong or in error. That would be a good form of excommunication.
Okay.
Because the bishop would say, deacon, if you don't, well, I'm going to excommunicate you. You need to come see me. You need to confess for saying these things. And that would be like my encouragement.
It's a restorative.
Yes, it should be restorative. Here. In this case, my sin is because I don't believe in the way that the church is being running. I don't believe that the church is living up to the ideals. If the Catholics believe Christ established the Catholic Church and that he founded it, I am quite certain if Christ came today, he would be unhappy with the way that it's being run. You know, they would suffer the same wrath as the Pharisees and very a lot of similarities. But so in order for this decree to be lifted, I literally would have to go on my knees and confess to Bishop Desitel my sins. So I would have to confess that I was in error for leaving.
Okay.
And error for believing what I believe. It boils down to one, he didn't have to do this. I chose to leave. He basically fired me 3 months after I quit. And not only fired me, but banned me from receiving the sacraments of the church, which is unnecessary. I don't know his motives, but it appears to be petty. It borderlines being malicious. Mm. You know, the harm it does to our son, to my son, who's one of his concerns. And one of the reasons why he waited 3 years was because I was a deacon. Mm. And he knew that ministry, my ministry of working with the church, and he knew how much time I'd put into that. He knew that the years of my life I dedicated. It was 5 years that I was in formation. Mm. And he knew all that, and he knew that was something special to me. And I really felt at that time, and I still feel at this time, that Christ was calling me to do something greater than just sit in the pew, to go out, to spread his message, to spread the good news. And my son knew that, and he knew what that meant. And, you know, I told him, I said, first and foremost, I'm a daddy. You know, God's going to have to forgive me. I will ask for God's forgiveness if what I'm doing is wrong. Mm. But I have a duty to stand up and protect my family. Mm. And whether it be the church, whether it be the government, whether it be whomever, you know, there are certain principles that, you know, you just can't cross. And the Bible's pretty clear, pretty graphic with the millstone. Whoever harms the innocent,
right?
Trusting person, it's like the shepherd slaughtering his own sheep. It's a sin in and of itself. But the priest that committed this, you know, he'll be able to walk out of prison, Stuart, and he'll be able to go to any Catholic church that he wish. He'll be able to receive communion. He would be able to do anything that he wanted in that church. As a matter of fact, he would still be considered a priest. He may not be able to do, you know, they removed him from public ministry, but he will be able to say, I am a Catholic priest.
Wow.
And, you know, by the time, because there's another paragraph in this letter that will eventually remove my ordination through the process of laicization, which I figured that would happen. I was holding an office in the church and I left that office. So that is something that I can understand.
Sure.
And it's not necessarily a punishment. But the excommunication, it is so rare. That's why this story has made it nationally and sure, even internationally, because it's rarely used.
And here we are.
And here we are in Lafayette, Louisiana, or the Diocese of Lafayette, Louisiana. Our bishop decides to level the heaviest penalty he can on the father of a child that was abused.
I mean, they're gonna,
during his watch.
You and I were talking about this beforehand. If this pattern is maintained, they're gonna have a long list of people to send these fancy letters to in a hurry.
Absolutely.
If we're just talking about people who have left the Roman Catholic Church, why aren't they getting letters? You know what I'm saying? Why isn't that Wikipedia list getting a mile and a half long real fast? So I've lived in South Louisiana for about 20 years, and the people that I have met, probably about, I'd say at least 30% of the folks that I interact with would say, yeah, I was baptized Catholic, but they're not practicing anymore. Like there's a huge number of people that have not been practicing for a long, long time. Why on earth? I mean, it seems like to me, because allow me to answer my own question here. It seems like to me, this is CYA, to say it, you know, bluntly. It seems like to me that this is some type of a mechanism to get you out of here before you cause any more problems. You know, otherwise, because it's not applied consistently. It's not applied consistently to other people who have left the church, but they're formally saying, hey, you get out of here. You're causing too much issue for us. We're moving on to the next thing. That's what it feels like. That's what it looks like.
And I believe you, Stuart, because during this time period too, you know, as being part of the clergy in the Catholic Church, there are over 100 deacons in the Diocese of Lafayette. During this entire ordeal, and we all consider ourselves brothers, during this entire ordeal, less than a dozen, and I'm going to use that number very liberally, but less than a dozen deacons have reached out to our family during this time. And I believe now it was for fear of getting a letter in the mail like this. And wow. If you want to associate with Deacon Payton, you're going to suffer the consequences. We were shunned by those within the own ranks of the diaconate, and just a handful of priests. Two came to every hearing that Guidry had for our support, not for Guidry's support. Mm. But on the flip side, no one ever showed up from the clergy or the church on Guidry's behalf none of the clergy, parishioners showed up and even wrote letters of support for him.
Yeah.
The dynamics here are unreal. And, canonists or people that practice canon law will say that the priest is not excommunicated because he didn't break canon law. So leaving the church is a bigger sin than molesting a child. Mm. And it goes back to, we even have friends that are Catholic and, they would prefer us to be atheists. They would prefer us not to be practicing than to go to another faith.
Interesting.
And that is very interesting. Cause there are great people, out here that aren't Catholic, that love Jesus, that are great, awesome Christians. And, I'm going to roll the dice, but I don't think I'm rolling it too hard. When you read scripture, we have a merciful God. We're in the Easter. Easter's only a few days away from now. I pray, that we see our Easter in this horrific battle that we've gone through, and more so for our 100% so for our son. As the father of as a husband, as a father, I have to get our faith back in order. I can't lose sight of Christ. Our children need to know that what this one man did, what the institution and the leadership has done, it is not Christ-like.
Yeah.
This is not how Christ wants any of us to act, especially those that are in a leadership role in any faith. Mm. Christ does not want people to act this way. Mm. There is nothing Christ-like in the bishop's letter to me. This is not medicinal. Mm. This is not love. This is totally something else. It's either to send a message to other members of the clergy, or it's to make sure that our voices aren't heard.
Mm. Well, I'm glad, as a Reformed Protestant, I'm glad you made it on this side of the Reformation. I'm glad you're over there. Trinity Anglican's a great place. I got tremendous respect for Pastor Peter Johnson down there. So I'm glad you guys are there, and I hope it's a good place for y'all to be as a family. Scott, thank you so much
for coming
and talking through this with me. I really appreciate it. Like I said, one day we'll have to have you back to talk more about Right on Crime, but we'll save that for another time. So thank you again.
That sounds great. Yeah. Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you guys again for joining us for another episode of the Parish Circuit. We're happy that you were here. You can go to theparishcircuit.com to find any more information and find other episodes that we've recorded in the past. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.